Yesterday evening, I received a call from my brother who lives in Indianapolis. I hadn't spoken to him in 15 years. The first thing he asked me is, "Robert, are you still good for nothing?" And I said, "Yes, I am, thank you." Then he went on to ask, "Have you accomplished anything worthwhile yet?" "Are you still nothing?" So I said, "I've accomplished nothing and I'm nothing, thank you. Are you something?" He went on to tell me his accomplishments. "I own a hardware store, and I bought a house, and I send my family to college, my son and daughter. I've got stocks and bonds. And what have you got?" And I said, "I've got nothing." So he said, "Why don't you give it up and start living?" So I paused a moment and I said, "Are you happy?" And there was a long pause. He didn't answer. So I asked again, "Are you happy?" He changed the subject. Then he started to relate how the IRS was on his back, how his wife is running around with some other guy, and all kinds of troubles. So we ended the conversation saying, "You can be good for something, I'd rather be good for nothing." But I am good for something. I'm good in relieving constipation. Friday, a lady called me from San Francisco. I never heard of her before. And she told me, "Robert, you saved my life." So I said, "I did, that's interesting." She said, "You come on, Robert, you know you saved my life. Admit it." So I said, "Tell me what I did." So she said, "I've got your picture hanging in my bathroom." That's nice. And she went on to explain, "Yesterday morning, I was really constipated."
"One look at you."
"And I thought I was going to die," she said. "I turned blue in all kinds of colors. I couldn't get up. Then I looked at your picture and I said, 'Robin, help me.' And you came out of the picture and you hugged me and relieved my constipation."
You just patented that.
Bravo. You made it, Robin.
So I said, "Well." "Isn't that interesting?" And she told me that I was kidding. I knew I did. She wouldn't believe me when I told her I didn't know what you were talking about. This is not the first time I've had experience with toilets. About 2 years ago, at about 12 o'clock midnight, another lady calling from San Clemente. And she said, "Robert, my toilet is stuffed up. Please do something." So I said, "I think you've got the wrong number. You're on the couch." She said, "No, I don't want to plumb, I want you." So I said, "You mean you want me to come over with my toolbox?" She said, "No, I want you to do something." What does he have to do? So I said, okay. She hung up. She called me back the next morning and said, thank you, Robert. Everything became unplugged. So you see, I'm good for something.
Did you win this?
Now the question arises, can a sage be in two places at the same time? Is it possible for somebody to think of a sage and be in communication with the sage, physically, yet the sage is not there, or somewhere else? When I was in Benares in India, I went to see a yani that nobody ever heard of called Swami Brahmadanda, which means the staff of God. He has three disciples that have been with him for about 50 years. He was about 90 years old. And I was invited to sit by him. I think I was the first Westerner to get the permission. So I sat with him a few days, listening to him say nothing. It was mostly silent. On the third day I was with him, he announces to his disciples, three of them were devotees, that his body is in pain. It's arthritic. That he has work to do. He hasn't finished his work on this plane. So he's going to leave his body tomorrow at 3 o'clock and take on the body of a younger person. He said somebody will slip in the street, it was raining, and crack his head, and I will take up that body. So I listen as I usually do. And we couldn't wait for tomorrow to come to see what happens. Nobody cared about the fact that we were going to die. They want to see if you can do what he said. So at about 3 o'clock, he was sitting in the lotus posture. He actually stiffened up, and he did die. I felt his pulse, no pulse. Pinched him. Nothing happened. The body was an empty shell. And we pulled around with his body for about a half hour to see if we can bring him back to life or whatever. Nothing. We heard a commotion outside. And we went out, and sure enough, a young man from Benares had slipped on the wet street, and in his head, there was a crowd gathered, and there was a doctor there. He was pronounced dead. All of a sudden, he got up and ran into the forest. No one has ever heard from him again. Explain that one. There are things going on that are very unusual in this world. Most Westerners never experience those things or come in contact with people who have. There's also the story of a great saint who was passing through the town. And in that particular town there was a snake, boa constrictor, used to devour little children. They beseeched the saint and said, "Master, please help us. We're all afraid this boa constrictor is going to kill our children again and again and again. Can you do something to help us?" So the master said, "Yes, I will." He went over to the snake and spoke snake language and said, "Snake, I want you to stop devouring these little children in this town. Leave them alone. Promise me that you will." And the snake said, "Yes, I promise." He couldn't say otherwise. He was a great saint. 6 months passed, and the sage was going through the town again. He saw a crowd of children, 40 or 50 of them, playing in a circle. He went to look, and there was the snake in the middle of the circle, all bloody. The children were throwing rocks at it, kicking it. The snake was nearly dead. The saint chased the children away and went over to the snake and said, "What's the matter with you? Why do you allow yourself to be beaten like this? Why don't you defend yourself?" So the snake said, "Oh master, I listen to you, I can't help it. When you told me not to harm the children, I have become helpless." And the snake said, "You foolish snake. I told you not to bite. But I tell you not to hiss. And this story is simply the fact that most of us think we have to get into a temper and fight because we're spiritual. The truth is, we can make a lot of noise and do nothing. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. We can pull out an act. Sometimes when I go to the bank and I want a loan, I'll put on a three-piece suit and tie and act normal. Don't throw me out anyway. Well, at least I try. But the reason I'm telling you this story is because this particular saint who did this feat with the snake was seen at four places at one time in various different cities in India. People said he couldn't have been there at this time because he was here. And another city up north, they said, "No, he was here." So the question again is, can certain sages be in three or four places at the same time? The answer is yes. This is a phenomenon that is very, very possible. When you realize your omnipresence, when you have an inkling who you are, that's all you have to know. Who you really are. That you are not a body-mind phenomenon. That you are absolute reality, that you are consciousness. That you are undivided. This alone allows you to be present everywhere at the same time. Because you are everything. Perhaps that is why the people in the toilet were able to see me. Yet I'm not aware of it. I don't have to be aware of it, because of the fact that to be aware of it, I would have to be somebody else. I would have to be the person who is aware and the person who appears somewhere else. But there's only one. And those of us who have faith in the sages and saints can actually talk to them, see them in the physical presence, yet perhaps they've been dead for many years, but they're also somewhere else in a different country. All these things are possible. And I mentioned also one day here, many times I have visions where I'm walking with Ramana Maharshi along the Ganges, and we're discussing simple things like the weather. This is just another example of the possibility of being two or three places at the same time. Now, a vision is not a dream. A vision is an actual experience. It is a phenomena happening in the phenomenal world. Anything is possible. Never believe that something is impossible because it limits you. Even if you have not experienced anything yourself, have faith in yourself that within you are all possibilities. Of course, the first thing you should realize is that there will never be a time when you disappear or die. Because there was never a time when you were born. You have always existed as consciousness. And you will always exist as consciousness. And even if a person is a skeptic, they say, well, I'm not consciousness, that's ridiculous. I'm conscious that I'm a body because I can feel myself, and I'm conscious you're a body because I see you and I can feel you. And you can scientifically prove this, that you're not a body. You can say to such a person, Are you the same person you were when you were conceived? When you were conceived, you were no larger than the size of a pinhead. Yet it was you. And then when you were a young boy or girl, you were no longer the size of a pinhead. You turned into something else. When you were a teenager, you were also someone else. Now you're a man or a woman, whatever, and you're someone else again. You are not who you think you are. If I put your body under an electric microscope, I would see space and atoms. Trillions of atoms revolving in the space. And the space without tremendous gaps between the atoms. The space is consciousness. The atoms are superimposed on consciousness, and they appear to create what you are now. So you see, you're not really the body. You're a bunch of atoms. You're in a state of flux. You're constantly vibrating. You're not what you appear to be. So when you identify with your body, you've got problems. Who can tell me why? Why do you have problems when you're identified with the body? Yes, exactly, that's the answer. The body is never the same. And you will always be disappointed. The body is skinny at one time. Then you say, I'm too thin. The body becomes fat, you say, I'm too fat. The body loses its hair, you say, I'm going bald, I've got to do something. The body becomes old, you say, I've got creaks in my bones. You're never happy. You never understand what's going on. And if you live just to make money, and you have lots of possessions, there's nothing wrong with that. As I always like to say, possess all you want, but never be possessed by your possessions. For if you think something is yours, everything has to change. It might be yours for a short time, then you have to give it up, either voluntarily or forcefully. And you're always crying, you're always bitching, you're always complaining, you always think something is wrong. But the only thing that is wrong is in your thinking. You are allowing your mind to dictate to you and tell you what's what. When you finally wake up slightly, you begin to understand that the mind is not your friend. The mind is only a conglomeration of thoughts about the past and worries about the future. That's all your mind is. Thoughts. Thoughts about the past and the future. If you listen, you become disturbed. Or you bring the past into the present, and then you become concerned about the future. People read the newspapers about the recession, man's inhumanity to man, war. Who becomes disturbed? The mind. you can never be disturbed. Because you are egoless. You are Satchitananda. You are Parabrahma. You refuse to believe that. You still believe that you're human and your name is Mary or Robert or John or Jack or Jane. And you are deeply embedded in that belief system. Therefore, you also believe the world is real, conditions are real, the universe is real, and you invent God in your own image, and then you pray to this God that you have invented in your own image, just like you're talking to Santa Claus. You believe in an anthropomorphic God, and you ask God to give you this and give you that, and take this away from my life, and take this person out of my life, and bring this person in my life. It's all a very funny game. Yet it helps when you pray, or you're relieving yourself. You're becoming sort of peaceful. Or you believe that this God up in the sky will answer your prayer and make you happy. And many times your prayers are answered. Such is the power of the mind. This mind is very powerful in appearance. It can create things, so you better be careful what you ask for. You might get it. Yet the time comes in our evolution when we truly understand who the mind really is. And we begin to observe it, realizing that it functions without us. We begin to watch the mind in action. We watch it making us depressed. We watch it making us angry. We watch it making us happy. We watch ourselves when we accomplish something great and we think we're important. Just the watching alone causes you to go further in your evolution. What shows you that I possibly cannot be the mind while I have been watching all this time. I have been watching my thoughts bring up the past and make me unhappy, bring fears into my life as if something bad is going to happen in the future if I don't watch out. We've been watching the mind do this to us. Then we finally say to ourselves, who is this watcher? Who is this person that has been watching the mind? We honestly have to say, therefore, I don't know. I don't know who I am. I have no idea who's been watching. But I have to admit, I have been watching. All these years I thought when I said I was referring to my mind. I believed my mind was I. But now as I watch myself getting angry, as I watch myself becoming depressed or becoming happy, I realize that I am separate from my mind. Therefore, who am I? Where did I come from? It's amazing that I am able to watch my mind doing all these things to me. But now I know that there's an I. Who's this I? I don't know. How can I find out? By becoming silent. Through silence. By allowing my mind to empty itself of all thoughts. And as I keep on watching my mind in action, without responding, I notice something very interesting happening to me. I notice that I feel happier. I feel more peaceful. And I feel more powerful. I notice that I've lost my fears, my frustrations, and even my searching for truth has slowed down. So I am beginning to understand that there's really nothing to search for. It's all here. Everything I've always wanted is here. Amazing discovery. Yet I still don't know who I am. But I'm beginning to understand that I don't have to know who I am. It is not necessary to know who I am. You follow? I doesn't have to know who it is. What an amazing discovery. I don't have to go around searching for the I. Or wondering who the I was other than watching the mind in action all these years. I simply have to become still. Be still and know that I am God. And to watching all of these years has caused me to become still. In other words, as you practice observation of your thoughts and mindfulness, your mind becomes quieter and quieter and quieter. And to the extent your mind becomes quieter and quieter, to that extent does your consciousness become revealed to you as absolute reality. Now when we talk about absolute reality or power Brahman, there are no words. For everything I would tell you about that would be superfluous. we therefore learn to keep quiet. We no longer get involved in complications. We keep our lifestyle simple. We actually stop worrying about the future, or about our existence, or about anything else. Something tells us from within that the same power that knows how to make apples grow in apple trees, flowers bloom so beautifully, mangoes grow on mango trees, wheat grow in the fields, and yet there's just enough sun, just enough rain, just enough of everything to sustain and maintain their growth. Something tells me that the same power knows how to take care of me. I can therefore be myself. Silence. Silence is consciousness. I no longer have to make something happen. I no longer have to worry about tomorrow. I no longer have to concern myself with what other people are doing. I can let go of all of this. And I will be taken care of. The realization again comes to you that what you call your body is not your body, but is also consciousness. It appears as a body. As you keep evolving, you keep seeing consciousness wherever you look. Or you have seen yourself as consciousness. And you know there's only ultimate oneness. Therefore, everything must be yourself. Everything becomes yourself, and you are that. And you're at peace. From that moment on, everything takes care of itself. What appears to be your body comes under karmic law, the law of cause and effect. Remember, that's an appearance. And your body, so-called, came to this earth for a specific purpose. It will fulfill its purpose without any help from you. That's the important part I wish you will remember. You will be fulfilled without thinking, without wanting, without worrying, without any kind of concern. All your needs will be met. Everything will unfold the way it's supposed to. There are no mistakes. No one came to this earth to suffer. I know there are some of you who believe, well, I must have committed some great sins in the past, perhaps in previous lives, because I'm sure suffering now. Are you really suffering? Is there such a thing? Think about that. the only reason you think you're suffering is because the world is not turning the way that you want it to. Isn't that true? You think you should be this instead of that. You should live here instead of there. You should have this instead of that. And that's what causes you to suffer. But when you become one-pointed and focus your attention on yourself, the capital S, it is virtually impossible to suffer because suffering doesn't exist. Now you can see perhaps why people like Ramana Maharshi, Ramakrishna, Christ, and many others who appear to be suffering when they die, literally told their disciples, nobody suffers. I am not suffering. You're suffering because you see me suffer. That's been difficult to understand up to now. But when you realize that you're not your body, and nothing is the way that it appears, it's literally easy to understand. So again, the secret is to investigate yourself within yourself. The external world can never prove anything to you. The external world is a world of effects, a world of illusions, a dream, maya, lila, play. Do not stake your claim in the world. And let's say that you even have good karma, so to speak, like we say. And things are relatively fine in your life. You think you've got what you want. You've got a great job. You're making a lot of money. You're living with someone you love. You've got a great house. You live in a place where the temperature is always 78 degrees. And you're relatively happy. But according to the so-called laws of the universe, that has to change. Simply because the universe is in a state of flux. Everything must change. If you have not found yourself in this life, and you simply die like the average person, you're going to have to continue and experience the opposite of what you've been experiencing. This is the reason you should not just become apathetic to spiritual life, because things are going your way. And say, like some people say, well, spiritual life is just for people who have problems. Be careful. Begin within yourself. Realize that you're not the person you think you are. Try to understand every day, I am not my body mind. I am not anything I appear to be. Then who am I? I must find out. And your factory of intelligence is within yourself. All the answers are within yourself. You begin, of course, in the morning when you try to catch yourself in consciousness. just before you wake up, there's a gap between sleeping and waking. That gap is your true reality. Try to catch yourself in that gap. Just the moment you open your eyes, before your mind takes over, there's absolute nothingness. That nothingness is the absolute reality. As soon as your mind takes over, I takes over. And that spoils it. Or you say to yourself, I am awake. And then your day begins. I have to go to the bathroom. I have to eat breakfast. I have to get dressed. I have to go to work. I have to do this and I have to do that. And you're lost in the day. But if you saw yourself as consciousness, you were able to see the gap between sleeping and waking, you will be in bliss all day. Total bliss. Then when you go to sleep, you do the same thing. You try to find that gap. Between wake up to where you really are, and wake up to peace, to happiness, to joy, to bliss. Wake up to your real nature. Your real nature is love. Wake up to that. Everything else that you experience. So when you wake up, you realize that I am absolute intelligence, absolute reality. I am that I am, such a conundrum, Parabrahma. And that means happiness. Every cell on the sides of your body, so to speak, tingles with happiness when you wake up. Wake up to your own happiness. Discard your thoughts. Discard your body and your mind. And be happy forever. Wake up. When you experience yourself as such a member, you realize that this is your nature as omnipresence. You're no longer an individual. Your individuality has merged with the Brahma. And the whole universe appears as consciousness. So you're no longer Jay. And you no longer have the problems and the attitudes that Jay used to have. You're free. You are the universe. You are the source of all creation. Nothing. You become nothing. When someone tells you you're good for nothing, you say thank you.
Very much.
Another word for nothing would be everything.
No, you're not everything because you're nothing.
Yeah. Which allows you to be everything in consciousness.
Yes. you realize that everything is a superimposition on you. Like the markings on the blackboard. You are the chalkboard, and everybody draws images on the chalkboard. But you know yourself as the chalkboard and as the images. Only you realize that the images on the chalkboard are not real because they can be erased. And if you try to draw an image you draw on the chalkboard, you try to grab it, you grab the chalkboard. It's impossible to grab the image. There's only the chalkboard. In the same way, you know yourself as consciousness, as absolute reality, and everything else is a reflection. It appears to come in slow stages, but the truth is it happens all at once, and it happens. As I always tell you the story about the Buddha, when he was sitting in meditation under that tree, his devotees were around him. And prior to that experience, he experienced all kinds of things and all kinds of levels. But when he decided to sit for 30 days or even until he died, unless something happened, finally after about 24 days or so, he opened his eyes. And his devotees asked him, "Master, what happened to you? Have you seen God?" He said, "No." "Have you become enlightened?" He said, "No." "Well, what happened?" And he simply said, "I am awake." For there was no one to become enlightened. There was no one left to become anything. Just awake. Pure reality. That happens all of a sudden. Just as when you turn on the light in the darkness amazingly disappears. When you turn on your own light, Maya ignorance disappears. In your home. It happens when you don't want it to happen. Or as long as you want it to happen, you have to get rid of the somebody who wants it to happen. Or the person who wants it to happen is keeping you back. And that is the personal I. Therefore, silence is the best way to wake up. Not by chanting mantras or prayers or incantations. Those things may bring you a little peace. That leads you to silence.
Yeah.
It's the silence that awakens you.
Is all thought then related directly and indirectly to
false? Yes. All thought is false. When you believe you are the personal I, then you think. Because the thinking is of the I. I think. I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about that. When the I goes, everything else goes. When the I goes, there's emptiness. And it's like cleaning out your drawer. Everything has to be cleaned out of it before you can have an empty drawer. In the same way, your mind has to be completely clear before the self emerges. And you do that by getting rid of the personal I. Watching, by inquiring, by being observant, everything will happen by itself.
The science is a little bit like a shifting ground, so right when you're silent and awakening, you go into the sleep, you're dreaming and silence, and not dreaming and awakening. So it's always that silence is where the shifts are taking place, states of being.
Not really. In the silence, there is nothing happening. The silence is consciousness, and consciousness is self-contained. Consciousness is not the cause of anything but itself. Everything else is an illusion. It only knows itself. No, it's self-contained.
It causes itself.
It causes itself to be itself. What I actually mean is it is self-contained. It knows itself. It knows itself as itself. It has nothing else.
It doesn't
actually cause anything. No, it knows itself.
And when we come back to our little self, then we recognize that we recognize.
No, you don't come back to your little self.
Okay.
If you come back to your little self, you never experience anything else. Except intellectually. There's no coming back. To the point of no return. There's nowhere to come back to. It's been destroyed.
Even if one gets a glimpse of it?
If you get into the highest revelation of the truth and you become a living embodiment of the truth, your body is gone, your thoughts are gone, the eye is gone, there's no one to come back to, it's all finished.
But we do seem to get
the truth. You get a glimpse of it, but you don't get a total reality.
I know to talk about it sometimes.
Yes. The total reality is the point of no return. As much as you want to spend. By spend, I mean giving up your ego. How bad do you want to give up your ego? Some of us are so caught up into our lives that we think are important. That we're actually afraid to give up the ego in its entirety. Because we're afraid of the unknown. We say something like this to ourselves. At least now I know where I am. And what I've got. And with who I'm with. But if I give everything up, I might just be nothing at all. But the nothing at all is gone. What you call God. And nothing at all is bliss. It is something that cannot be explained and cannot be defined. But if you really knew what it was, you would fight like hell to get there.
Is this the silence I'm hearing?
Are you hearing the silence? Don't ask me. Ask yourself.
So your true nature is most easily grasped in the transition states between waking and sleeping, between sleep and dreaming and so forth. And it's always there potentially. But during those pauses, the body-mind mechanism can most easily become aware of consciousness itself or its true nature, at which time it ends, because it just seems it's like a busy work and it no longer has to do that.
Yes. As you focus on that gap, every day the gap will become wider and wider and wider until you get the full meaning of it as absolute reality. Then you no longer come back.
It's like a fault line where consciousness can come through, where the truth can come through more easily than when you're fully conditioned during the middle of the day when I'm working or something like that.
You can say that, yes.
And it's every new one that goes through the world, not only the one time.
Yes. You begin to feel greater and greater as you keep experiencing and as you keep practicing.
And that
continually
erodes and burns away the illusion of
things. Yes, it does. Your body consciousness begins to lessen and lessen, and the gap becomes larger and larger. Mm-hmm.
Then is when you begin to
look
for nothing.
Yes, then you become a good for nothing.
But the gap gets larger and larger, you mean it gets more intense, not that it lasts longer in sense of time.
You're beginning to lose yourself in the gap. And you're losing all your materiality and your mind. So when somebody tells you you're losing your mind, that's another compliment. Just like you get for nothing, so say thank you. And so you're losing your mind, Fred. Say thank you.
You saw that long ago.
That's what I'm trying to do. I've been working this for years.
When you're using a who am I, when you put your attention on the pause that follows?
Your attention is on the pause. The pause is the source. So you ask, who am I? And you wait. You ask again, and you wait. You ask again, and you wait. And something interesting will happen after a while. And the pauses will become larger and larger, just like the gap. And you will begin to feel a bliss and a happiness and a joy. It will give you an idea that that's the route to go. Until you jump in completely and become free.
Is there the same kind of pause and breath between the in-going and out?
Yes.
So if you practice I am, using the breath, there's also the transition at both ends of the breath.
Yes.
It's much smaller.
Yes.
Harder to grasp.
When you inhale, you say I, and you exhale, you say am. The same gap is in between I am. There's so many things you can do. You have to do it. Your job is to become aware of these things. And that when you go home from there, you start worrying about yourself and your body and your image and everything else. Forget about yourself and remember the things you want there.
The funny thing is when I got home from work, I was really tired and I couldn't even stay up. And I put on this fantastic music, like the most beautiful music I ever heard. And all the tiredness of the body went away. And I stayed up all night in ecstasy listening to his music. Now, it was like the mind was gone. I was pure love, pure emptiness, and just soaring, just flying, just is this a mental happiness or is this a touch of something?
It can be mental and it can be a touch of something. Why'd you come back? See, now you're yourself.
Turned off the tape.
What's that mean?
I have to carry it with me all the time.
What's it called?
the Phantom of the Opera, the lady, Sarah Brightman, who sang All I Ask of You. She has a new album, and it's unbelievable.
That's why they say that music suits the savage beast. It makes you calm and relaxed.
I'm not a beast.
It's just not a beast.
Can that be a mental? Is it just a mental happiness? Is it just pacify the mind and it's really not it?
It's like the tapes we play in.
So it's like a jumping off point.
Yes.
It was nice because it showed me something. And I said, why can't it be like that all the time without the music?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's like a place to see and then to jump off from.
So it just says, why can't I find the eye? Well, it made you happy for a while, so it's good. But it has to go away. You can find your real source if you have your own
thing. Things in that place, there's no tiredness, there's no needs. It's funny how the mind gets tired and angry. When you're not tired, you're not angry, and the whole world has changed, and you can stay up forever like that.
Yes, you're in a great vibration. That feels good to you. But it's sometimes. Let's sing another song. Anything else you'd like to talk about? Say, ask.
Well, I'm talking about the silence. You know, that's for this crowd, the realization, this crowd. Does the silence have to reach a certain purity of depth of silence, absoluteness before it happens?
The true silence is when you dive deep, deep within yourself and you pass all of the material world. And all of the states of your consciousness, that you call your consciousness, and all your karma, and the whole universe is gone behind, you left it behind. Then you're in the true silence. The true silence is not quietness. It's absolutely reality.
Is that the true sad sign also? Will the boys reside in that silence?
It appears, that's how it seems. That's how it appears. There appears to be a disturbance. There appears to be a body. There appears to be thoughts. and there appears to be a personal I. So the same.
The gap is always there. It's just that at certain moments there's nothing but the gap.
Yes.
And that's what you have to become attuned to, is the nothing but the gap states. Then you become aware of it at all times.
It's in a weird,
it's full stop.
Right. There's nothing else. It's all Henry. Henry is all there.
Don't if you do, you'll get swallowed.
First of all, you said the atoms are superimposed on consciousness. That implies two, atoms and consciousness.
Everything is in the same category. I. It all belongs to the personal I. The atoms are attached to the personal I, the molecules.
What are the atoms? Are the atoms consciousness modified?
No.
What are they?
The atoms are like the body. They're in appearance.
Consciousness in motion, whereas consciousness at rest?
It's an optical illusion. The only thing that is true is yourself, which is consciousness. Everything else is not real. It appears to be like a dream. That includes your atoms, your bones, your lungs.
Anything.
Robert?
That sounds a little bit like either the most advanced. Well, what I mean is, if this chair, it has the form of a chair, it appears as a chair, but it's consciousness.
Everything is consciousness.
It is consciousness. So it's not that this is per se a dream or illusion, unless it's on the highest level, or it's, like I say, sloppy. Because how can people, if they need a bridge to understand what's happening, is this is an illusion, it's this is a chair, but it's not, it's taking, consciousness is taking the appearance of the chair.
As long as you believe that you are the body mind, and you look at a chair and the chair feels solid, and you believe the chair is a chair. So you're saying it's consciousness, but that's just intellectually.
Well, I mean, I'm in the experience of it as consciousness.
There is only consciousness.
Yeah. But if there was only consciousness, and it didn't even take on the appearance of color, then I don't see how you can walk through the body and walk from one place to another.
Well, you can't see.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not so. It's like when you're having a dream, and all these things are happening in a dream. And I tell you the dream doesn't exist, everything in the dream is false. And you're telling me no, you're telling me something, you're telling me no. This is a chair, it must be consciousness. So I'm saying consciousness is all there is. And then you wake up, it's all gone.
You wake up when the dream is gone.
And it's gone, everything is gone.
So we can't really understand it until we wake up.
That's right.
And another consciousness wakes up to itself.
Exactly, my friend.
Where does love come in?
Love is another name for consciousness. But not the love that you know. It is a love that can't be explained. It is really a love that is absolute. If you really knew how you are loved, you wouldn't be able to stand it. That's how powerful it is. But it's synonymous with consciousness and absolute reality. That's the reason why you should never think or believe that you're being hurt. There's nothing wrong. That's blasphemy. What you're really saying is, I deny consciousness. I deny love. And you cause yourself to suffer. But when you identify with pure love, you're identifying with consciousness. And then everything is okay. Just the way it is.
Whatever it takes to
time will take care of itself, of course.
Right. To eliminate this consulate.
That's true. Even if you do nothing at all, you'll go through lifetime after lifetime, so it appears, lifetime after lifetime, a million times, until you wake up. What we're trying to do here, I suppose, is awaken to the truth before we leave. Stay where you are. There's nowhere to go, there's nowhere to come back to. You just are. You're yourself. Your omnipresence.
That's true when you're not awake also.
Yes, that's wrong. It's only intellectual. But when you wake up, you're actually dead. And there's really no place to go, no place to come back to.
You are fun about that.
Yes, you are. You just are. You are an embodiment of love, of consciousness. And that embodiment is omnipresence. The kalpas were written to satisfy the longing for people as far as years are concerned. How long the universe lasts, how long the body lasts, how many eons it takes for the universe to come back again. And you go into Brahman and Shiva and Vishnu. That's for the benefit of the people. But more often than not, it doesn't.
There's no you, so it's a misnomer.
It's a misnomer. There's no you to experience anything.
No. So you say, then you just are. But there's no you.
There's no you, there's no I. It's just the nothing, the void. You're nothing.
The limitation of language.
Yes. You become, but you're nothing.
At last.
I told you so.
The reality is nowhere.
The reality of world choice is an illusion. The only choice you have is not to identify with anything that happens. Not to identify with yourself as a body mind. That's the only choice you've got. Everything else is preordained. What's the choice? The choice not to identify with anything. That's the more music.